ranked among the top 20 countries with best business environment in the world, according to the World Bank's Doing Business report in 2005. Moreover, the pay-as-you-go social security system, which faced serious long-term financial shortfalls, was partially privatized. By January 2006, roughly 1.1 million Slovaks, or 50% of eligible workers, opted for personal retirement accounts. Slovak macroeconomic performance improved as well. Cumulative foreign direct investment to Slovakia rose sixfold between 1998 and 2005. The list of foreign investors includes many blue-chip companies, including Citibank, Ford, Motorola, US Steel, and Rupel. South Korean Hyundai and French Peugeot are building factories in Slovakia, and by 2008, it is expected that Slovakia will be the largest car producer in the world per capita. Economic growth accelerated from 1.5% in 1999 to 6.1% in 2005. It will grow at about, I believe, 7% this year. According to the Slovak Ministry of Labor, unemployment, which used to be one of the most pressing problems in Slovakia, has fallen from 18% in 2000 to 11% in 2005, and real incomes per capita rose by 6% last year. When Slovakia became independent in 1993, its income per capita was half that of Czech Republic. By last year, Czech incomes were only 33% higher than incomes in Slovakia. And so, Slovakia, a country that Madeleine Albright once famously called black hole in the heart of Europe, became a country that became a symbol of reform for many around the world, and was praised accordingly by the likes of President Bush and Prime Minister Blair. Well, one of the men who was important to the reforms in Slovakia is with us here today. And he's, of course, the former Deputy Prime Minister of Slovakia and the former Minister of Economics, Mr. Ivan Mikloš. Ivan Mikloš was born in 1960 and studied at the University of Economics in Bratislava. He was assistant professor there between 1983 and 1987. And in 1990, he became an advisor to the Deputy Prime Minister of the Slovak Republic. He rose through the ranks of the Slovak government to become, as I mentioned, Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Economics in 2002, where he oversaw many of the reforms that I just mentioned today. Following the defeat of the current government in the June 2006 elections, he returned to Parliament, where he represented the Slovak Christian and Democratic Union. Please help me welcome Minister Mikloš.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for coming to this meeting. Only small correction: what Marian Tupi said. I was Minister of Finance, not Minister of Economy. Sorry. That was also that gave me possibility to prepare tax reform also as Finance Minister. Let me briefly continue in the introduction of Slovakia, of my country, and then to speak mostly about tax reform. And not only about results of tax reform and content of the tax reform, but also about political side, or mostly about political side of this reform and other reforms. Slovakia, as it was mentioned, is one of the very dynamic countries. For next year, we expect to have economic growth 7.3%. But 8 years ago, as we came to the government, situation was very, very different from today's situation. Slovakia at that time was excluded from the integration. Slovak economy was on the edge of serious financial crisis. Bank have been state-owned but on the edge of collapse. The macroeconomic instability was very high. It was no FDI influx, foreign direct investment influx to the country. At that time, it was the first Zurindas cabinet, Zurindas government came into power in 1998. The most important priority was to stabilize economy, to provide some general macroeconomic stabilization, to save the banks, to restructure them and then privatize them, and catching up other Visegrad 4 countries, which are Poland, Czech Republic and Hungary, in the integration process. I think it was done between 1998-2002 by the first Zurindas government, which was much broader as second one, which served in 2002-2006 period. Elections in 2002 created the biggest and the most important political precondition for doing deep structural reforms, which we have provided in this second term between 2002 and 2006. It was after election was created four parties coalition, which was relatively very homogeneous regarding economic program, regarding conviction about necessity or need of doing deep structural reforms. They have been center-right. There have been differences in other areas, but in economic program it was more or less consensus that we want and we need to further improvement of the macroeconomic stability, to further reduction of the fiscal deficit, to enter not only European Union but also Eurozone, to improve business environment and to provide structural reforms. Another important precondition for doing these reforms or important priority was consensus or agreement on the increasing of economic freedom in the society, in the economy. Slovakia during last 10 years was the number one country among EU 25 countries regarding reduction of public expenditures as share to GDP and reduction of tax burden among all EU 25 countries. Both of these figures decreased by 10%. Today's share of public expenditure to GDP is around 40%. It was more than 50 10 years ago. And today's tax burden, tax quota too, is around 30%. It was around 40% 10 years ago. The second most successful country in this regard, which is Lithuania, decreased the tax burden by 5.5%. On this you can see that it was really, really very important and very, very quick development. If you are speaking about structural reforms, there have been tax reform, which I will speak in more details, pension reform, which was mentioned by Marianne, then healthcare reform, which was maybe the most sensitive and the most difficult politically reform, and then also public administration reform and public finance reform. Another important reform which improved business environment was labor market reform. Slovakia, as a result of new labor code, which was passed in 2003, has now one of the most flexible labor market in Europe. I will speak more now in more details about tax reform. Tax reform is the most well-known reform among these structural reforms which have been done. Tax reform was very, I think, comprehensive, and old tax system, previous tax system, was very similar as it is at present in most of Western European countries, but also still the most of Central European countries. We have had before very steep progressive taxation. We have had five tax rates coming from 10% to 38% for personal income tax. Corporate tax was 25% before, but 15 years ago or 10 years ago it was even higher. It was 50%, then 40%, then 29%, and then 25%. But in 2003, in last year of the previous tax system, corporate tax rate was 25%. We have had two levels of VAT. We have had 20% and 14%. In both of these was approximately 50% of items of goods and services. New system which we have now, which works from January 1st, 2004, is based on the flat tax, flat rate, as it was mentioned, 19% for both personal income tax and corporate tax, and also 19% of value added tax. We have cancelled four taxes. Tax on dividend was mentioned. We have cancelled also gift tax, inheritance tax, and real estate transfer, transfer tax. As a result of this, the system, and it created possibility, and this is maybe the most important result of the tax reform, is that the imposing flat tax created possibility to cancel all exemptions, deductions, and special rates for different types of incomes. And as a result of this, we have now one of the most neutral, simple, non-distortive tax system in the world. Very important for implementing reform and for to do it possible from political point of view was also increasing tax-free income increasing. We have had, as I have mentioned, the lowest level of the lowest rate of personal income tax was 10% before, and now it is only one rate, 19%. And of course, that the reduction from 38 to 19% means that high income people have been their tax burden was decreased. But we have been thinking about how to reduce tax burden, not only for high-income people, but also for low-income people. And to do it, we have increased significantly tax-free income. Tax-free income was increased by 2.5 times from the January 1st, 2004. Before, it was around 30,000 crowns per year. Then in 2004, it was 82,000 crowns per year. Which means, in reality, that around 16% of people are no paying any income tax, and then everybody is paying effective tax burden is coming from 0 to 19%. Everybody is paying from the 19% from the difference between his income minus this 82,000 crowns, which are increasing, which are valorized by inflation, this tax-free income. As a result of these changes, now we can say, and now we are in the third year of the operation of the new system, we can say that it works very well and it works very, very effectively. Tax incomes are growing in all taxes. Very important was in the first year that it was income neutrality in the tax reform. As we have been managing the, as we have been preparing new tax system, another priority was the decreasing fiscal deficit of the general government, which means we had to do it fiscally neutral, and it was one of the problem how to estimate the correct rates and correct tax burden for not to have problems on the public budget. I think it was managed very well. We asked also independent institutions for provide estimates, and then, but true is that we have received very different estimates from different institutions. Then we took more conservative, not the most conservative estimates, but more conservative as average was, and then reality development was approximately as we have expected, even more positive, but from the fiscal point of view, it was also successfully done. Let me now speak more in more details about political economy of this reform, because I think this is maybe the most difficult part of reform. How to do it, how it was done in Slovakia, what have been political preconditions for passing this kind of reform? Firstly, I have to say that flat tax, Marian Tupi mentioned that the program declaration of the government in 2002 was very ambitious. That's true, and it was also fulfilled almost every important reform which we declared that we have done. But flat tax was not implemented in the program declaration. It was not declared that we will impose flat tax. But what was in the reason for this was that we haven't been prepared, and we didn't know at that time if it will be possible or not. Not only from the political point of view, but also from the technical point of view. It was no deep enough and comprehensive enough study and analysis which was allowing us to do it. What we have done, we put to the program declaration principles which we want on which we want change the tax system. We wrote there in the program that we want to have much more simple tax system, much more neutral, that we want reduce tax burden, that we want reduce direct taxes and partially compensate this by increasing of indirect taxes, that we want a reduced number of exemptions, deductions, to have much more simple and stable tax system. Then after coming to the government, as I became finance minister, I have created working group, also from the staff of ministry, but also from the external experts. And we have started search what is the best solution for fulfilling this criteria of the changing of the changes in the tax system. And then we came to very important conclusion, because we have been preparing alternatives. It was one alternative which was searching, was the flat tax, and another one was still progressive taxation, but changes in the system. And we came to the very important conclusion. And that conclusion was that only flat tax is offering real possibility to really simplify the system, to really reject all exemptions, deductions, and special rates. Political costs for this was that flat tax, it was necessary compensate this by higher increasing of indirect taxes, as in the case of no imposing a flat rate. And this was politically the most risky part of the business of the tax reform, was VAT, increasing VAT unification. Important point was also that we have put in the program declaration that we will unify VAT rate, that we will have only one VAT. We came to conclusion that the flat tax is the best solution, and it was also estimates, quantitative estimates have been prepared, which I have mentioned. We have prepared this, and I started to discuss and to try to convince partners, coalition partners, for doing this. First problem was that they have said, yes, we agree with the implementing flat tax, with the reduction of the tax rates on the income tax and corporate tax, but we don't agree with the same rate and the unification of the VAT rate, because it is politically risky, because it will mean increasing of prices, and it will be rejected by the voters. Then important was, I have said, yes, but unification, VAT rate unification, we have in our program declaration. It was very important that it was written there. Many of them, majority of the politicians, didn't know this, didn't recognize that it is written then as it was passed, but then it was very important to convince them that we have to do it. It is our public commitment to do it, and it was passed in the program declaration. Another problem in the trying to gain consensus inside of coalition, I'm speaking about coalition consensus of the four parties, was that they said, because our original proposal was 20-20-20, 20% for flat tax and 20% for VAT unified rate. They have said that, okay, then we agree, but it is too high. We need to go further and to have 19%, which finally I have agreed, but we have changed estimate for the fiscal deficit, because before my original proposal was 20-20-20 and 3.4% fiscal deficit for 2004 year, first 1 year of the new tax system. Then we have agreed on 19-19-19 and 3.9% of fiscal deficit for year 2004, which was good, and I have no problem with this, of course, because 19 is much better, not only because it is less than 20, but also psychologically it looks much better, 19 as 20, and difference is psychologically more than 1%. Then very important, of course, was the most important was not only passing this to have consensus inside of coalition and passing the government proposal, but then the approving it in the parliament. In the parliament, another important step which we took was that, because it was popular among our MPs, this part of tax reform which was popular, which was decreasing taxes. But as I have said, VAT and excises, because we have increased excises also, but we had to do it also because minimum level of excises in the European Union. And in 2004 we have entered European Union. Then from this point of view, we took strategy that I put first on the First in the parliament this unpopular part of tax reform. Firstly, we have approved in government, and I put to the parliament VAT law, unifying VAT on 19%. And we have declared that only if this legislation will be passed, only then we will put also a reduction of direct taxes and canceling these four taxes which I have mentioned and imposing a flat rate. It was done successfully in June 2004. Then another problem was that president returned these laws to the only one VAT law to the parliament. And we had to pass this again in September. And it was more difficult that because we need, if president is returning legislation to the parliament, then we need absolute majority from all seats in the parliament, not only from the present members of the parliament. But again, it was fortunately passed, and from January 1st, 2004, new tax system is working. Another important point in this regard is that what is the perception of this tax reform at present, and what was the perception during these first years? The general atmosphere, not only for this reform but for whole reform policy of the government, was not very positive at that time. Because media, especially part of media, trade unions, opposition have been creating public fears, have been simply increasing the fears of people. People have been afraid because media have been arguing, and opposition and trade union, that it will be impoverishing the country. It will be good only for rich people, but it will be not good for the poor people. It was connected also with the very negative campaign of the EU entering consequences. Fico, leader of opposition at that time, was arguing that after entering euro, and we have entered euro in the May 1st, 2004, we will have the European prices and Slovakian salaries, that prices and especially prices of food will be increased because membership in the in European Union. And this was the most difficult, politically most difficult period was the end of 2003 and first half of 2004. Because majority of those reforms which I have mentioned, the structural reforms which we have implemented, majority of them, including tax reform, have been prepared during 2003. Passed legislation was passed in 2003, and they start operate in January 1st, 2004. At that time, we had to do also the last stage of price deregulation. For better illustration, it was significant price increasing. For instance, gas price for household have been increased by 35% from January 1st, 2004. In the same date, new tax system started operate, which was very negatively perception of people was negative because it was more visible have been negative was negative part of tax reform was more visible because it was increasing of VAT, increasing of excises, which have been reflected to the prices immediately from the January 1st. Reduction of the personal income tax was not such visible. It was visible later on the salary of the people. In this situation, in this atmosphere, it was by organized referendum. It was initiated referendum organized by opposition and trade unions, and the main goal of this referendum was firing government. The question was, which is strange, but it was this referendum. The question was, do you agree with the shortening election term for this government? And then referendum. At that time, by the polls, more than around 70% of people have been dissatisfied with the government policy, with their life and their perspectives. And at that situation, the referendum was organized in April, in mid-April. And despite of this situation in the country, despite of this atmosphere, only 32% of people came to this referendum. We have 50% threshold, which means the referendum was not valid. From 32% people who came, around 90% voted yes, we agree, and around 10% voted not, we don't agree. Which means only about half of even dissatisfied people used the possibility to shortening election term for government, to firing government. This is very important from the point of view of political economy, political dimension of reform. Another important point was that then in June 2004, there was EU elections in all EU 25 then countries after enlargement. And there have been only four European countries in which government parties won in these EU elections. It was Finland, Luxembourg, Spain, and Slovakia. But through also this, that in Slovakia, only 17% of people came to these European elections. But through also this, that government supporters came more than opposition supporters. Which means the main conclusion, at least for me, is that it is not that people are not such stupid that even many of people, some of people didn't come to the referendum and to the European elections because they didn't trust anybody. But some of people didn't come because they have been dissatisfied with the situation, with the government policy, with the reforms. But they felt, at least somewhere inside, that it is no other easy way, and it has sense that it will bring results. And this is, I think, a very, very important point. Then, also because reform worked and brought positive results. Also, perception of the people regarding reforms have been slowly and slightly changed. Especially tax reform and pension reform became more accepted and more popular also by broad population. Another important point is what was the result, what was the effect of the tax reform for different income groups. Figures which I will mention are from the first year, 2004. 2005 and 2006 are even better than 2004. It was no significant income group which was in 2004 worse as in 2003 because tax reform. I'm speaking about year-based figures, of course, because it was different situation in the first quarter and first half, where the costs, negative effects of the VAT and excises have been bigger than positive effects of the income tax reduction. But because economy was growing, because nominal and real wages have been growing on the year base, it was partially compensate and then fully compensate during on the 1 year, whole year basis. For the worst situation was for the middle income people, and that's for the people whose income have been around the average salary, and it was, but also for those people it was in first year of the tax reform positive growth around 0.81%. In real terms. For those, for instance, who have been on the minimum wage, they have 3.1% real income growth in the first year of reform. And those who have had high incomes, it was even higher growth. For two people, for instance, with minimum wage and two children, it was real growth around 8%, because we have had some changes also in the child allowances. And of course, in the second and third year, 2005-2006, also and also because economy was growing and is growing very quickly, these effects are even higher and more visible. Let me conclude this contribution by saying something about the most actual situation, because we are just now a few months after elections, and the slug reality is that we have now a new government which is led by party and leader which was very, very anti-reform, which was in pre-election campaign promising to canceling all reforms. And tax reform was one of the most important target of his policy. Reality is that almost no reform was canceled. Partially, one reform, healthcare reform, was partially canceled and significantly deformed. But for instance, in tax reform, we have there have been passed. They are in the process of passing only two very cosmetic changes, which are not changing the architecture of the tax system, which operates in Slovakia. This is it has more reasons. One of reason is that economy and tax system works very well, and it is accepted by all experts, but also more and more people. Another reason is that some promised changes could have negative fiscal consequences. And another important priority and commitment of the government is entering Eurozone, and it creates very, very strict limits for doing changes also in the tax system because of negative fiscal consequences. And last point, what I would like to mention is a broader point, not only about tax reform, but I think very important point. We have done a lot of reforms, and we have lost power in the last elections. Many of people, also analysts and journalists, come to conclusion, because these two facts, that we have done a lot of reforms and we have lost power, many of observers then are making conclusion that it is evidence that it is too risky to do reforms, and Slovakia is example that which is not very supportive for reformers, for instance, in the Western European countries. But I have to say that this is not true. We have lost power not because we have done reforms. We have lost power because we haven't been possible agreed on the different alternative which was possible. Three former coalition parties and the reform parties are member of the European People's Party, and the fourth one, Mečiar's party, applied for membership, and Mečiar was never against reforms as Fico was, the current prime minister, and Mečiar was ready to go and to create coalition, four members coalition with three former government reform parties. Reason why it didn't happen was that one, the smallest former coalition party, Christian Democratic Movement, rejected this possibility. And another evidence that it is not true that we have lost because reforms is that the most reform party, and it is undoubtedly the most reform party, is Slovak Democratic and Christian Union, my party, Zurinda's party. We have gained in the election 2006, after doing all these reforms, we have gained better election results as in 2002. Which means we have had in 2006 now, in latest elections, 18.4%, and in 2002, 15.4%. Even I think that, but it is only my hypothesis, that if we were not doing these reforms, I think our result was worse in 2006 as it was. Which means I don't think that doing reforms means necessarily that politicians have to lose power and fail. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I wonder to what extent the Estonian experience and the Baltic experience, as well as the introduction of flat tax in Russia, had an impact on Slovak reforms. But maybe that's something that we can discuss in the discussion. I would like to now turn the podium over to my colleague, Chris Edwards, who's the Director of Tax Policy Studies here at the Cato Institute. Chris is a top expert on federal and state and local tax and budget issues. Before joining Cato in 2001, Chris was senior economist on the Congressional Joint Economic Committee examining tax, social security, and entrepreneurship issues. From 1994 to 1998, he was a consultant and manager with the PricewaterhouseCoopers, examining fiscal issues before those were considered by the Congress. Between 1992 and 1994, he was an economist with the Tax Foundation. His articles have appeared in Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, the Washington Times, Investors Business Daily, etc. He holds an MA in economics from George Mason University in Virginia. Chris, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Marian, and thanks a lot for visiting the Cato Institute, Ivan. It's great to hear right from the reformer's mouth how all the reforms are working in Eastern and Central Europe. We have lots of critics in this country and at the IMF and elsewhere who thumb their noses at flat taxes and almost sometimes you think that they're almost hoping that the flat taxes in Eastern Europe fail, but I don't think that's the case. So it's great having you here, Ivan. I want to be really brief, maybe about 10 minutes, to talk about three different items. First, the global trend towards lower tax rates, income tax rates around the world. Secondly, some flat tax reforms in other countries other than Slovakia. And third, what are the prospects for reform in the United States? Well, top personal and corporate income tax rates have been falling now across the globe for two decades. In 1980, the top personal income tax rate in the OECD countries was 67%. It's now 44%. A decade ago, the average top corporate tax rate in the OECD was 38%. It's now down to about 29%. And these rate cuts are continuing even as we are here today. These rate reductions have been driven not just by far-seeing policymakers like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, but they're really part of a long historical process dating to the 70s that have been driven by fundamental economic factors. In the 1970s and 80s, a number of countries, Britain and others in Western Europe, moved to take off their capital controls on their currencies and deregulated their financial markets. What that did is it liberated billions and now trillions of dollars of investment flows that started moving over international borders. Pretty quickly, countries figured out that with all this money moving around, they had to make their tax systems more competitive. And the other, there's sort of been a change in mindset, too. If you go back a few decades, many countries like Canada, India, Sweden used to shun inflows of foreign investment for nationalistic reasons. Now there's been a 180-degree reversal in that, and now most countries go out of their way to try to proactively create a good investment climate. So capital is much more mobile today than even a decade ago. In the early 90s, there was about $200 billion a year of foreign direct investment flows that flowed across international borders. Today, that's quintupled to about $1 trillion a year flowing over international borders looking for good investment returns. The structure of the economy has also changed. It used to be that multinational corporations just wanted to locate in foreign countries. Mainly, they wanted to go to where mineral deposits were located, the Middle East for oil, Latin America for metals, and that sort of thing. But the whole nature of corporate foreign investment has changed, and industry is a heck of a lot more footloose than it used to be. Most of what multinational corporations do today is they manufacture goods around the world and they trade in services. Those industries can be located anywhere. That new footloose orientation of industry has been combined with a revolution in container shipping that has reduced transportation costs. And, of course, communications costs have plummeted with the Internet and other innovations. The rule of law and security of property and contract have spread around the world as well. And what all this has done is all these non-tax factors have been equalized across the world. So corporations and investors have much, much more choice as to where to invest, where to build factories than they did just a few decades ago. Some folks think that these international investment flows are only driven by different wage rates around the world. There's constant concern and complaint about low wage rates in places like China and India, but that's not true. Corporate taxes in particular are a big driver of investment flows. And the chairman of Intel Corporation gave very interesting testimony to the President's Tax Commission last year. They did calculations and they looked at setting up a sample chip fabrication plant in China versus the United States, and they looked at the cost differences between the two countries. The biggest difference in cost for them was not different wage rates in the United States and China. It was taxes. China had substantially lower taxes for their investment in China than United States. And that makes sense when you think about it. Companies like Intel are very capital intensive. Wage rates don't make that much of a difference. It's issues like human skills, transportation networks, and tax rates that make the difference for those sorts of companies. So one of the recent manifestations of these falling tax rates around the world have been the enactment of flat taxes in 9 Eastern and Central European countries just in recent years. Now, the idea of a flat tax originated in the United States with two American scholars, Robert Hall and Alvin Rubushka, back in the early 80s. Their flat tax was a very simple consumption-based tax that had a very particular design for individual and corporate tax systems. Now, a lot of countries in recent years have been adopting what have been called flat taxes, such as Slovakia. And the critics have said, well, you know, these aren't true flat taxes. The Slovakia flat tax, the Russian flat tax, these aren't real flat taxes. They're not pure flat taxes like the Hall-Rubushka system. And that's true. But it mistakes the forest for the trees. What Slovakia and Estonia and other countries have done have been very much a big move toward the Hall-Rubushka flat tax in at least 3 different ways. These flat taxes in Eastern Europe have low flat tax rates. They have ended many loopholes and special deals for different industries. And they have generally been a very pro-saving and pro-investment orientation. So the concept of a flat tax really encapsulates those three different ideas. The one of the handouts that was on the table outside looked at the flat taxes in the nine countries in Eastern Europe and Central Europe that have adopted them. The average personal income tax rate in the nine flat tax countries is 19%, and the average corporate rate is also 19%. All these countries have ended lots of loopholes. Some, like Slovakia, have done a very good job in creating a very clean tax base. Russia has a little bit of a messier tax base. They've still got some, retained some sort of very special deductions and credits. But still, the Russian flat tax is a huge leap forward over the old income tax system. On both the personal side and the corporate side, there's a very good piece recently by the Russian Deputy Minister of Finance in Tax Notes magazine that really convinced me that what they've done in Russia is revolutionary on the personal side and the corporate side. On savings, traditional income taxes like the U.S. income tax is very anti-savings and anti-investment. But many of the new flat taxes have done great things in a pro-savings and pro-investment direction. Slovakia has a 19% corporate tax, but dividends are completely exempt at the individual level. And that means that the total tax on dividends is simply the corporate 19% rate, and it's zero at the individual level. Now, that compares to the United States, where dividends face a 35% corporate tax, they're paid out to individuals, and they face another 15% tax. Similarly, in Latvia, the corporate flat tax is 15%. Dividends are exempt from tax at the individual level. So Latvia has a 15% tax on dividends, again, compared to the U.S. combined rate of about 45%. Estonia took the tax relief on dividends the opposite way. They abolished their corporate income tax. Corporate profits are only taxed in Estonia when they're paid out to individuals, and they're taxed at 23% at the individual level. So the United States can learn a lot from the flat tax countries of Eastern and Central Europe, not just in the low flat rates, but in the many pro-savings and pro-investment features of these tax systems. Now, will the flat tax revolution continue? And some folks are arguing that no, these flat taxes will eventually descend into graduated and complicated tax systems like the United States has. The IMF came out with a recent working paper where they sort of cynically said, looking forward, the question is not so much whether more countries will adopt a flat tax as whether those that have flat taxes will move away from them. Now, the IMF paper, as I said, it's really cynical. They don't give enough credit to the countries that have adopted flat taxes, and I think they're wrong. For fundamental economic reasons, I really believe the flat tax revolution will continue. Tax cuts are going on right now as we speak. Estonia and Lithuania are phasing in further cuts to their flat tax rates. Egypt just radically cut their corporate tax rate from 40 to 20%. A new World Bank study that came out just the other day showed that 33 countries around the world have cut their corporate tax rates in just the last 2 years. So in my view is that the flat tax revolution will continue, these global flows of investment will keep growing and intensifying, and that will put even greater pressure on countries like the United States that haven't reformed their tax system. So what are the prospects for reform in the United States? Well, there's sort of good news, bad news. The bad news is that U.S. policymakers still seem to have their heads in the sand and only seem to dimly understand the changes that are going on in the global economy with regard to tax competition. And Democrats, the new Democrats that control Congress and the administration, last week were talking about working together on a new competitiveness agenda, but they're really only talking about more subsidies for science and other things, and they haven't talked about cuts to the corporate tax rate. President Bush's tax commission came out with a good report in 2005, but the administration unfortunately has let that study and tax reform sit on a shelf collecting dust. U.S. politicians talk a lot about corporate tax avoidance, but they don't take the obvious step of cutting the corporate tax rate, and like Russia, seeing a sharp drop in corporate tax avoidance. The good news is that now would be a great time to do tax reform. The economy is booming. Revenues are flowing into the federal government, providing plenty of room for some serious tax reform. And global tax competition will continue to increase. It seems to me eventually members of Congress of both parties will get around to understanding that those businesses in their districts back home are facing fierce tax competition from foreign competitors. The U.S. auto industry is hurting, of course, partly because of high tax rates. And my proposal would be to send them off to Slovakia, where the automobile industry is booming because of the new flat tax rate, so that members can take a first look at how flat tax reforms work in the real world. But so now we've got Democrats taking over Congress in the new year. The Republicans had 12 years in power and didn't do much with tax reform. So let's give the Democrats a chance here and see where they go. I got to say, though, that we aren't starting off in a promising way. Nancy Pelosi has already come out promising new tax deductions and credits for things like energy and education and other areas they want to give tax subsidies. Some Democrats are talking about major tax reform. Senator Wyden from Oregon has a new tax reform proposal, and he really is trying to get some bipartisan support for it. Serious tax reform is not impossible in the coming years, but I must say it's going to be some pretty heavy lifting in the next few years. And with that, I'll close up, and I think we're going to try to do some Q&A.
That's right. Thank you, Chris. Thank you. Thank you, Chris, very much. Do you want to take a minute or two, or shall we just go straight? Okay. And any questions from the audience? Yes, the gentleman right there. Switch it on. I don't think it's on. Is it on?
I'd like to ask Mr. Miklos the extent to which the costs of tax collection have declined since the reforms took effect.
I don't have figures, but yes, of course, that if a system is more simple, it creates possibility for savings in the tax administration. This is something what didn't happen, it is necessary to say, during last 4 years. It was another our goal to reform also tax administration. We have prepared legislation, new law, but then it was not passed in the parliament because not only opposition, but even our partners, we have been only a party which was supporting this. Also, our partners rejected this, simply saying because they have their appointees in the regions, in the position of the directors of these tax offices, and our proposal was very radical. We wanted to cancel majority of this district directorates and to save also people and also to reduce a number of people, a number of administration in the tax office. And then another problem in the why it was only partially created space for savings and for reduction of administration was that it was also the opposite process of entering European Union, which is connected with some new needs in the administrative capacities, which means without doing these reforms, this tax reform, it was even necessary to increase number of people in the tax administration, but it was not increased because we have used these saved capacities for new needs, for new competencies, which are connected with the new membership in the European Union.
So the EU was really a friend of big government. I don't expect you to agree or disagree with that. Okay, over there.
Matt Bennett, Cato. We've heard a lot about correlation, but I wanted to ask about causation. What's the evidence that Slovakia would not have enjoyed the kind of economic growth that it has if not for the tax reform?
Yeah. There is, of course, no direct evidence, and you will have no direct evidence. What is the composition of the factors which affected economic growth. But there are some also direct evidences or figures which are, I think, supportive to say that high and especially sustainable economic growth is because tax reform, not only tax reform. I've mentioned that tax reform was one of the complex package of structural reforms and improving of business environment. Firstly, it is clear that if you are reducing direct taxes, then it is stimulating activity, investment, working. Second, if you are doing this kind of reform, it is reducing tax evasion. Firstly, because it was lower motivation to do it. If tax rate is 40%, you have much bigger motivation for tax evasion as if it is 19%. But not only because lower motivation, also because lower possibility how to do it. And this was very important, that simplicity and neutrality of the tax system, rejecting of all exemptions, exceptions, cancelling all of this, reduced significantly possibility how to do tax evasion. Because tax evasion is much easier if system is complicated, if there are a lot of exemptions, different rates, and so on and so on. Which means at least this, and there are also other positive effects. For instance, in Slovakian case especially, tax reform has had effect also as incentive for attracting investors and investment. It was also because Slovakian tax reform became very well known in abroad, especially in Germany, France, and other countries. It was also thanks to criticism, which was done by Chancellor former German Chancellor, former Swedish Prime Minister, and former French Finance Minister. They have criticized the Slovakian tax reform. And the media, of course, German media covered this criticism, and then it was debate. And thanks to this, almost every investor in Germany, for instance, now knows about Slovakian tax system. And of course that it was attracted then them for invest in Slovakia and so on and so on. And it is possible to continue in this direction, which means I don't have exact figures what part of this growth was because tax reform, but it is, I think, clear that it was also thanks to tax reform.
Before I take the next question, would you mind telling us very briefly about, have you had a look at Estonia, the Baltics, and Russia before you took the step toward flat tax?
Yes. To the most important examples have been Ireland and Estonia, but we didn't took mechanically what they done, because for instance one important difference between Russian and Romanian flat tax on one side and Slovakian on the other side is that for instance in Romania they have imposed the same flat rate for the personal income and corporate tax, 16%, but they remained all these different rates for some minor types of income, some different types of income, which means they didn't use enough possibility to use flat tax for really simplify and neutralize the tax system. And in this regard, I think at least until now, the Slovakian tax system is the most simple and neutral.
Okay, let's have a question here in front. Actually, let's take both. And
this question is for Mr. Miklos. The proponents of tax reform in this country sometimes oppose a flat tax because it retains an income tax, and they're afraid that we're going to, if we retain an income tax, we're going to slip back into the kind of tax system that we have now. And indeed, we had a tax reform here back in 1986 where we reduced it to two rates and reduced a lot of deductions, and look where we are now. In your country, has there been any pressure? I know that this reform has been pretty recent, but has there been any pressure or any legislation, any talk about bringing back some of the deductions, bringing back new deductions, or bringing back different rates to where it was before?
Okay, and the lady, and we'll go to the question. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yeah, that's right.
Gene Montgomery. I'm just curious about the nature of the governmental apparatus that collects the taxes and how well you know what income is out there to be taxed. For instance, in this country, you know, we have corporations are required to submit quarterly statements and so forth. I'm just curious how well embedded in the institutional structure of your country is the information flow about what income mm-hmm. is.
Okay. Thank you.
What was the second question?
Okay. That's true that in every country it is not after doing good reforms, it is a risk that it will be erosion of reform. Of course, this is permanent, never-ending pressure to change, to gain exemptions, some deductions, some special treatment, and so on. Of course, and it is the not only theoretical risk. It was, as I have mentioned, the current government, strongest current government party, was openly against tax reform, and they have explicitly promised that they will completely cancel the tax reform. Now, reality, I have said, is much, much better. There are only two changes, small changes. But one of these changes, for instance, is that they are, as I have mentioned, one part of tax reform was unifying value-added tax. It was no exemption. No, everything was in 19%. They have promised to put 50% of items to the lower. Now, because fiscally it is impossible, but they did first step. Medical drugs they put on the lower level, which means it could be, of course, and it will be a dangerous precedence, because of course it will be pressure now of the producers of food, of the newspaper, books, editors, and so on to have the lower level. But it is everywhere, and despite of if there is political change or not, this pressure is, and that's the reason why it is important to fight against and to explain that it is a risk of erosion of the system. And estimates, it was especially difficult. One of the most difficult part of preparing and implementing this reform was really to have this estimate of fiscal consequences of the different alternatives of rates, and especially the even more complicated situation was in Slovakia, because it was the first year of European Union membership. It is also connected with the uncertainty and new expenditures and revenues, new system of VAT, for instance. With the EU membership is connected new system of registration and paying value-added tax. And it was, we knew it, that also other countries, as they have entered, as Austria and other countries, they have had problem with this. Because new system means that it was there have been some deficits, new deficits connected with this membership in the new economic area. That means, yes, it was difficult. Only way how to diminish this uncertainty is to have more estimates and this is what we have done. We have taken the more conservative, not the most, but more conservative estimate. Because then you have chance. If it will be better, then it is good, of course, you have more space. And if it will be worse, it will be not much worse if you are taking the conservative estimates.
Let's take these two.
Milan Jacek, after you have done all these changes, why would you want to join the Eurozone?
Okay, good and poignant. Second question.
And one of the major initiatives I know going on in EU right now is to increase the level of innovation. And one of the subsets of that is to increase research and development. And one of the major fiscal policy measures that, or initiatives that governments can use is the R&D, the research and development tax credit. I wanted to know if under a flat tax, or in particular under the Slovakian regime, that tax credit is still retained. And if not, has that pushed pressure more towards direct government grants to subsidize the level of research and development, which free market people would dislike even more than the tax credit, because as the government picking winners and losers, Or does the flat tax just obviate the need for either credits and grants because it does in itself promote innovation?
Thank you. Very good question.
I will start with this research and development. We don't have tax incentives for research and development. And generally, it is a very important principle which we have set. It doesn't mean that it is not necessary for the support of the to have science policy, research policy to support science and research, but not through the distortion of the tax system. That's the point. We have said we will not distort tax system by doing industrial policy, research policy, and other type of policies, which doesn't mean that it is no space or need for this kind of policies, but not in the income side of state budget, but on the expenditure side. If state want to support publishing of books, not by reduced, then yes, okay, but not by reduced VAT, but by contributions, expenditures, and so on. That's the point. And research and development is crucially important. That's the reason why we have, and not only, knowledge economy, everything connected with the knowledge economy, informatization, e-government, and so on and so on. And that's the reason why we have passed a program called Minerva 1.5 years ago. And it was another our priority, which means sustaining reforms and further improving of business environment and developing knowledge economy is only way for long-term competitiveness. Because the problem which Slovakia will have is that from the short-term perspective, we have now 7% growth, and it will be 7% next 2-3 years, despite of policy of the government. But because this competitiveness is based on the comparative advantages of mass industrial production, and these comparative advantages will be decreased also because economy will grow, salaries will grow, labor costs will grow, competitors are here, China, India, but also Ukraine, Bulgaria, Romania. If we will not develop sufficiently knowledge economy, then it is threat for the long-term competitiveness. And that's the problem of this government, current government policy. Eurozone. I know that there are different and that this is a very controversial topic, but I am strong supporter of the membership in Eurozone and for the entering Euro. The reason is, and of course, there is one significant risk, but I think only one significant risk, and this is a risk of the sustainability of the whole project. But for a country as Slovakia, for a small and open economy, it is important to be there as soon as possible after fulfilling criteria on sustainable basis. That's important. Mainly because two reasons. First one, and again, for such small and open economy. Firstly, because it will reduce transaction costs significantly. At present, 100 foreign trade turnover of Slovakia is 170% of GDP. 90% of Slovakian export is going to the European Union and 60% to Eurozone. Only transaction costs, I mean fees for conversion of the currencies in export and import. There are billions of crowns. And even more important is the reduction of volatility and unpredictability of the currency rate. Slovak crown is small, of course, currency of the small economy, and the volatility of the currency rate development is distorting or increasing costs, significantly increasing costs, especially for exporters and importers. And the development depends not on what will happen in Slovakian economy, but what will happen in broader financial market in the world. The currency rates of the Visegrad countries, for instance, are going together. If Slovakia, because Slovakia is the smallest of these countries, if something wrong will happen in Poland, then it has immediate effect for the currency rate, not only in the Poland, but in Slovakia also. And then predictability of the conditions, business conditions, are very, very difficult. And another important reason for entering, look at current, I have explained, the most effective reason which is limiting incompetent policy of the current government is that we have entered in ERM2 in November last year, this waiting room for euro, and that Fico had to take this commitment that they will enter eurozone. Without doing this limitation, I'm afraid that not only the expenditure policy could be very irresponsible and they could increase deficit, but also even reforms, including tax reform, could be much more easily cancelled if there is no limitation, strict fiscal limit connected with the eurozone. Because what happened, why they took this commitment? After creating Fico's government, current Slovak government, in July of this year, because the composition of this government, because pre-election programs and promises of Fico's government, markets, financial markets, became very nervous as Slovak crown go down, very steeply and very quickly go down, which is politically, of course, very unpleasant. And Fico became very nervous, came to the National Bank, and National Bank, they explained him that market needs strong signal. Only strong signal that policy will be responsible, and only strong signal was to have strong commitment that government has priority to enter eurozone. After doing this, really, currency rate was stabilized, and now Slovak currency, just today, in these days, has historically the strongest position. Also because state budget was passed in the government with deficit lower than 3% of GDP, and because it seems to be that government wants to enter eurozone, which means it is very strong anchor also for doing responsible policy or not doing irresponsible policy, better saying, maybe.
Chris, do you want to weigh
in? Real quick footnote on research and development. There would be no and there should be no special treatment of R&D under a pure Dick Armey or Hall-Rubuschka flat tax. There's a tight connection between research and innovation and capital investment. Much of the innovation in our economy is embodied in companies buying new machines and new equipment and building new factories. Under the Dick Armey flat tax, all such investment would be immediately written off or expensed, which would be a big step forward over the current tax treatment. That, in my view, would be the biggest possible spur to new innovation. But I don't think we should specially subsidize what the government might call research over other types of investment. The current R&D tax credit is enormously complicated. It's a classic example of a government meddling in the tax code. In my view, that is unnecessary, and it provides a lot of benefits to companies that would do the type of research anyway without the credit. And again, just from personal experience, I know the R&D credit is enormously complex, and it's one of the many features of the corporate tax code we ought to simplify.
Are there any more questions?
Can you just comment on Stephen Moore's idea of tax code choice?
I think that's probably...
Steve Moore had an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal a few years back where he talked about not an alternative minimum tax like we currently have, but an alternative maximum tax. And his idea was you would have a parallel tax system, and the government would that had a low rate. I forget exactly what his rate was. It would have a low rate with no deductions, and people simply had a choice of paying under the current complex system with graduated rates or his flat rate. It's an interesting idea. I don't really buy it that would be a step forward for major reform, because I think you just end up with an even more complex tax system. TurboTax would incorporate even more additional calculations and would try, would optimize the tax code for people. Folks who did better under the old system simply wouldn't switch to the new system. And so it seems to me you'd be left with a simple system beside the current complex system.
Well, thank you very much to all of you for coming. Please join us upstairs for lunch.